from an undisclosable location. For reasons of security and therefore insecurity, but I will tell you this much, hovering on the electromagnetic wave somewhere over the great state of Texas. Yes, where March 2nd signifies Texas Independence Day and the expression and slogan and banner, "Come and Take It," takes on a new meaning. This is Coast to Coast AM, and welcome to another Saturday night edition. John B. Wells sitting in with you tonight for a program I believe that you will like. We're going to be joined by Brad Barker. He is the president and founder of Halo Corporation, a California-based organization composed of former special ops, national security, and intelligence personnel specializing in discrete security operations, maritime security, humanitarian assistance, disaster response, and all aspects of security training. Tonight we will discuss with him everything from human trafficking, rescue and extraction, and preparedness for that future, which may extend its lily-white arms to us. Interesting stuff on the coasttocoastam.com website. Third radiation belt discovered around the Earth. Big meteorite discovered in Antarctica. Did UFO hit the Russian meteorite, blasting its two smithereens? And the bizarre eyeball transplant, allowing tadpoles to see out of their tails. Yep, so much for having eyes in the back of your head. Conjures up some interesting possibilities, doesn't it? Now, you may have heard Charles Harrelson's son, Woody Harrelson, has been killed in a car crash in Australia. This is apparently a completely ridiculous, ludicrous, and otherwise false report. Could I just put out an appeal for people who are putting stuff up on the net that is just blatantly and deliberately contrived? We got enough of that already. Please stop doing that. You're not helping anything. You're not helping. Okay? All right, good. From one of my favorite little websites, Full Spectrum Dominance, with a dash between the full and the spectrum and the spectrum and the dominance.com. This is a little bit disturbing. Listen to this. Should children and incompetent persons be euthanized in Belgium? The AFP has reported that the Belgian legislators are debating extending euthanasia to children. That's extending it. They're already doing it. Primarily newborns with disabilities and incompetent people with Alzheimer's disease or dementia. The AFP article that's titled "Belgium Debates Euthanasia for Minors" stated that Belgian legislators opened a debate Wednesday on whether to amend a decade-old law on euthanasia to cover minors, being told by experts it was already taking place in practice without any set guidelines. Currently, the law applies to those over 18, but one expert told the upper house of parliament it was clear that euthanasia was being carried out on younger people. Quote, "We all know it," said Dominique Biren, head of intensive care at Queen Fabiola Children's University Hospital in Brussels. Faced with this reality, doctors need a legal framework. She was quoted as saying, "It is clear that the guidelines that govern the Belgian euthanasia law, including the prohibition of euthanizing children, are being abused and ignored." And all this clamor off and on about, we need to be more like Europe. It's like, I don't think so. The Fort Hood shooting suspect trial is set for May 29th. And as all these economic problems just seem to spiral ever downward toward the great porcelain void, climbing student loan delinquencies, pinching the young home buyers, they're talk about jobs that don't even offer so much as a 401k, which many would submit to you that are largely useless anyway. Greece has a promise from the army not to intervene against a civil uprising. I mean, do you see where we're headed here? Maybe. Okay. Drones can detect if a citizen is armed. Yes, it's true. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has customized its Predator drones, originally built for overseas military operations, to carry out at-home surveillance tasks. Civil libertarians are worried, identifying civilians carrying guns, tracking their cell phones, and government documents show all of this. And it's just a wee little bit worrying. And then there's this thing, Mr. Bill Gates continues his God's work. Third world vaccine workers are just getting shot all to H and dying everywhere that this initiative is being carried out. The February 8th, the UK publication The Guardian reported 9 healthcare workers got just shot dead by gunmen belonging to a radical Islamic sect. So how's that working for you, Bill? Maybe what you ought to do is mind your own business. But that's probably just me. I'll tell you what, we have a curious case. Yes, it's the curious case of the Curiosity Rover. Would you like a little update on this? It's very interesting. Wow, just in time to not get the answer that we were looking for. Let's speak with Richard C. Hoagland in just a moment. Strap in tight. This is going to be a good one. This is Coast to Coast AM. Now, this information is unverified, but all of our intelligence gathering apparatus has indicated that the vice president himself, Joe Biden, is an avid listener of this program, this particular program, Saturday night program. And, he recently, among other things, he was making comments on firearms and the like and advising people that women especially to get a shotgun because it kicks far less than an AR-15, which tells me that he's shot neither of them because a shotgun kicks like a mule compared to an AR-15. But anyway, he said if you want to defend yourself and repel an intruder, you just shoot through the door with your shotgun. Well, apparently a Virginia man did that, and the would-be intruder got away, and he was arrested for reckless conduct with a firearm. But I think what's happened here, bless his heart, is that, I use that expression, fire a shotgun out the back door all the time. And I think Vice President Joe took it to mean fire the shotgun through the back door. It's like, no. Out the back door, not through the back door. I'm sorry. I'll try and be more clear in future. Richard C. Hoagland, are you standing by to take us away?
I am here.
Well, what's going on with Curiosity and what's going on with you? What's up? There's a glitch, a ghost in the machine. Something's up.
There's several. Let's see, where to begin? This is such a complex tale with such an important punchline.
Okay.
Last time we were on, we were talking about physics.
Yes.
And my expedition to Chichen Itza and the James Bond kind of stuff that went down as I was trying to get readings. Well, since then, I've obviously been looking in parallel with the data coming back from the Curiosity mission. We did a show where we discussed images, and I sent you some.
Yep.
And there's junk. The only way to describe it is there's junk all over the place.
Yes.
When Curiosity landed, which was last August, and NASA, in their infinite wisdom, that's a tongue-in-cheek reference.
We know that.
Named the landing site Bradbury Landing. By the way, did you see them honor Ray at the Academy Awards?
Yes, I did.
That was very, very appropriate.
Yes, it was.
Anyway, they drove away, and instead of heading toward this mountain that we've all been hearing about in Gale Crater, Mount Sharp, they went in almost the opposite direction for a little over 600, 700 meters to a place they've called Yellowknife, which is named after a geological region in northern Canada, which apparently has all kinds of really cool rocks for geologists, so they're kind of in love with the place, and they've transported that name to Mars.
Yes.
And for the last 7 months, well, maybe six if you don't count the drive time to get there, they've been prowling around doing reconnaissance, taking endless color panorama pictures of rocks, Martian rocks covered with, dust, orangish dust everywhere, and looking at all kinds of things that are totally mind-blowing. If you're any kind of a conscious person from the neck up, you can't look at this stuff. John, you saw the images. Doesn't it look like mangled junk?
Well, yes, those objects are clearly not naturally occurring.
Now, you would think on a mission which says we're being driven by discovery. Is that a plug for the credit card?
Why not?
And it's called Curiosity.
For the channel.
I have never seen less curiosity exhibited by a group of scientists in my entire career. They have driven past anomaly after anomaly and stunning discovery after stunning discovery. And it's all been like, what the heck is going on? They've taken months to do things which could have been done in basically days. Now, that's the first red flag. What would you suspect, John, if your space agency says it's going to take a month to analyze one little, you know, drill sample of rock?
I would say they've got their hands full with something else.
Exactly. It's a cover. The reason it's taking so long is because they're doing everything else, not taking pictures of it and sending them to us. So it takes them a month to do the intended task because they need that carve-out, that cut-out time, to do the secret mission, which is the real mission of Curiosity. Curiosity killed the cat, satisfaction brought him back.
Yeah.
So we've been waiting and waiting and waiting because the first drill sample from inside a Martian rock was supposed to, you know, be done, a few days ago.
Yes.
And then they put it in the little hoppers to take it into the instruments inside the spacecraft. And they did an analysis, and an old friend of mine, Craig Cavalt, reported on Wednesday. I'm not sure when the slug line is. Let me see if I can go find it. Wednesday at 1:24 p.m., Wednesday afternoon, he reports, and is an excellent reporter, used to be with Aviation Week, premier space reporter. And he has a detailed story written on spacereference.com about the analysis of this first rock sample, which could be a big deal because the scientists, when they were looking at the drilling, they all said, what in the world is that? For one thing, it's gray. It's not red. For another thing, it has incredibly fine particles, so it's made up of something that's really, really, really fine when it was, you know, liquid like a sediment, and then it congealed into a rock millions and maybe billions of years ago. And so when you get stuff out of the center of one of these things, you're getting pristine material that hasn't been contaminated for maybe 2, 3, 4 billion years. So the rock itself is called a mudstone, which is not a type of rock. It's a type of formation of rock. You know, all kind of different chemistries lumped under the general heading mudstone. But the identification is a very soft material to drill into. And it was formed in water, lots and lots of water. The perfect environment to retain and preserve carbon materials, organic materials, what they're looking for. Was there a former epoch on Mars? This is, again, mainstream perspective. Was there an epoch billions of years ago when Mars was conducive to life, brought forth life, and then buried it in the sediments to be turned into rock to be analyzed billions of years later by this little gadget called Curiosity? Well, the literal day, the morning that they're going to send this data back, courtesy of my friend Craig and his reporting, that's the day, that morning, when, for some reason, we're told by JPL, Curiosity did not send its daily downlink of data to NASA. First big, huge glitch in 7 months. And the soap opera unfolds that it's stuck on a computer loop. When they realize this, they send emergency commands. This takes us into like Thursday, Friday. They switch from the prime computer that was doing the weird stuff to a backup. Backup says, reporting for duty, sir, and promptly signs off the air. Puts the whole damn thing in what's called safe mode, which basically is the electronic equivalent of being an armadillo and curling up into your shell.
Sure, hit the pause button.
Yep. So that's where we stand. And the critical rock sample, which will tell us, again, in the mainstream model, if Mars was habitable in this location with lots of water and maybe even organic materials in this first analysis, that is stuck in the analyzers in Curiosity And because the computer's gone haywire, both of them, it can't radio the data home.
You know, Richard, I know you don't know, and certainly I don't. It's just a question, but the governments of various countries that are capable of launching anything, you know, that might hold together in outer space, do you have anything that suggests that there have been, looking at all this debris, I mean, some of it looks like remnants some of the suits and craft that might have appeared in an Ed Wood movie back in the day. Do we have anything to suggest that there have been black operations? Is it possible for any of these space agencies around the world to mount missions to other planets and the public never hear about it? And do we think that it might be possible that some of these things might have failed and that's some of the debris that we're seeing?
Well, all right, the first problem with that hypothesis is why would they all go to the same place? Mars is a planet equivalent to all the continent areas on Earth combined, millions of square miles. The idea that everybody would go, because the amount of junk we're seeing is so significant that it's got to be a large technical complex that was smashed into debris, basically a city. There's a buried city underneath all that mud and sediments and dust that we're seeing. That's our model.
Okay. Yeah.
Is any of it human from Earth contemporaneously? Well, probably not. But if Gale Crater, the almost 100-mile-wide crater that we're in, which used to have a lake in it, which has this huge mountain that I have, you know, proposed could be an arcology, an extraordinary super civilization habitation complex, because their technology was a lot better than we could even project.
Sure.
If that model is true, then every civilization on Earth that rises up to our level, assuming we're not the first, and there's all kinds of indications. I mean, all you have to do is listen to half a dozen nights of guests on Coast, and you hear, you know, archaeologists and anthropologists and, you know, researchers and writers all the time talking about ancient high-tech civilizations that have vanished into history. And we have bits and pieces that we're trying to reconstruct here of fabulous epics. Well, if there was one, could there have been more than one? I mean, time is a huge blackboard that you can write on. You know, and the amount of information that we have of the ancient history of the Earth is so minuscule compared to the yawning, cavernous, you know, corridors of time where you can lose 1,000 civilizations in 1,000,000 years.
Oh, sure.
It's totally scientifically plausible. In other words, it doesn't violate anything that we know about basic science, again, mainstream, to propose that this planet has been heir to, let's say, a dozen high-tech epochs, and then you have crashes, then you have rebuilding, then you have crashes. And, you know, remember all those Mad Max movies after a so-called nuclear war?
Oh, yeah.
You get that, except you get it worse. The planet itself, depending upon the weaponry used, basically would become uninhabitable for a period, and then you have to really build back up. So that takes a lot longer. That's 100,000 years to do that. The point is that suppose that Gale is a sacred place, a repository on Mars of successive records of successive civilizations.
There's an idea.
So then everybody winds up going to the same place. You know, the old cliche, all roads lead to Rome, which instantly leads us into metaphorical projections of what's going on with Pope Benedict. Suddenly, after 600 years, the first pope to resign, and all kinds of strange stories, you know, orbit around that phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that we are living through extraordinary times, absolutely unprecedented. And we've got this robot now, in its belly is a sample of stuff that if it's sent it to Earth and it comes out organic or, God help us, even sophisticated proteins. In other words, that detritus there is the remains of the city. I mean, how can you have a city without organics, right?
Right, you can't.
Think of all the people that used to live there, and then in your imagination ask yourself what happened to them when the catastrophe hit them.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I'll tell you what, let's take our little break here, Richard, and come back and finish up the hour with you. This is fun. I want to bring up something that that occurred to me that I had personally not heard of before that involves what's underneath St. Peter's Basilica and the cancellation of a certain program, or at least a hiatus that this program is now taking. We'll come back with Richard T. Hoagland in just a minute, and we'll get ready for our next hour guest. That would be Brad Barker, the president and founder of Halo Corporation. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Richard, a while ago I asked, what if a bunch of different space agencies decide to go to Mars? Even though it's farther away, Venus is the closest one, right? But you can't see anything because it's obscured by clouds.
Well, you go where the environment is going to teach you something remarkable, and Mars is the place. I mean, we've known that.
What if it turned out that it was a sacred site, and that's why everybody went there?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And okay. I'm not just saying it. We have data. We have evidence. Are you in Texas or in L.A.?
I don't remember.
Boy, that's an undisclosed location.
I'm telling you.
Because in about a month, in the first week in April, I'm going to be at the Awake and Aware conference in Glendale, laying out the results from Chichen Itza that I didn't get to do at the Conscious Life Expo,
yes,
and the backstory on this extraordinary Martian enigma. Look what they've done, John. They have created, maybe, as a cover story, because the story is so eerily similar to what happened to the Spirit rover back in 2004, where it suddenly went nuts. Its computer started spitting out garbage and gibberish and locked in a loop, and they took like 2 weeks to figure that out. They've carved themselves out here a period of time. They're saying now that they won't be able to get the second computer, the B computer, that went into safe mode, back up and fully running everything for about a week. The other problem is, so we're not going to get any data, right?
Right.
They're going to be doing nothing, but there's no pictures, no science, no drilling, no chemistry, no nothing. Just engineers trying to solve a problem, right? So there's nothing for the public to see and nothing for the media to write about. Add on that Mars is approaching the sun on the far side. It's called conjunction. It happens roughly every 2 years. And during that period of time, which straddles about a month, 2 weeks going in, 2 weeks coming out, Mars is too close to the sun for reliable radio transmissions and telemetry of data, either to the spacecraft from the huge antennas on the Earth or from the spacecraft through the satellites in orbit, Mars Odyssey and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which are relaying data to the ground stations on Earth for processing. Which means, in essence, they've got like a month plus a week or two, 6 weeks outside, to conduct a secret mission with nobody asking any questions. All the press people, all the groupies, all the websites that are following this, you know, for the last several days since they announced they had a problem, nothing's been posted. Nobody can talk about anything because there's nothing to talk about.
Right.
That's going to go on for 6 weeks now.
I think Stephen is right. He just sent an email saying perhaps we've been pronouncing NASA wrong all these years. Maybe you and Richard should start using long A's instead of short, giving naysay. I think that's really good.
Very nice. So you see the big picture here.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a damn thing we can in the short term do about it because they control. Remember that wonderful TV show called The Outer Limits?
Absolutely.
We control the horizontal. We control the vertical. We can make it crystal clear. NASA controls everything in this arena. The rockets, the spacecraft, the scientists, the money, the downlinks, the antennas, the computers, everything. There's no independent person except maybe Elon Musk someday in 20 years that can send an individual private spacecraft to basically see if they're telling the truth, if they're honest. It's the ultimate monopoly in terms of the history of the human species in the solar system. And they've been doing it for 50 years.
Well, they've been covering up archaeological discoveries right here on good old planet Earth for decades. So what makes us think they're going to loosen up when it comes to another planet?
Well, the good news is that there's so many people now watching and so many people listening to us, including, if I can believe your intro story, Joe Biden, that the honest folks simply have to take control of the asylum. And if you don't think we're living in an asylum, I refer you to the past week in Washington.
Oh, man.
Okay? As my grandmother,
if we get into that, I'll be accused of being a right-wing, politically oriented loon. And
but
I don't much
see,
care.
If you look at this in the right way, and this is going to strike a lot of our listeners in the wrong way, what's going on in Washington is like a diversion from the important story, which is what's going on Mars. And the reason it's important is because it holds the keys to our future wealth, well-being, our freedom, our ability to, you know, live the kind of lives we should be living. Every positive for civilization is going to be found in those ancient ruins if we can loosen the science and the knowledge base and the medical discoveries and all the other breakthroughs that are now being monopolized by a handful of people who, of course, have bought and paid for their pet scientists and through NASA are running a secret op, while the rest of us think they're simply looking at rocks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that that's true.
Remember the controversy a week or two ago about the silver door handle, the thing that was sticking out of the rock a few feet away from the rover they'd taken a picture of? And it looks like it's polished metal, and it's sitting on a little base, and it's sticking up, casting shadows, and acting like a like the gnomon of a sundial.
Does not look like a rock, does it?
It looks like a piece of manufactured metal that got trapped in the rock when the rock and it were co-bonded through some catastrophe.
Yep.
You're familiar with something called the Antikythera mechanism, are you not?
Not in the least.
Oh, well, if I describe it, you'll probably ring a bell.
Okay.
Back in the 50s, Greek divers, archaeologists found...
Yes.
See?
Are you talking about the little disks that were found on the...
The little analog computer that was made of bronze.
Oh, yes.
And was encrusted with marine growths and sedimentation, and it looked basically like nothing, like a lump. But when they subjected it to X-ray imaging, suddenly it turned out to have 50... interlocking complex gear trains.
Wasn't it some sort of a celestial navigation device?
It's a celestial computer planetarium that allows you to run the solar system back in analog format with gears and springs and, you know, sprocket wheels and that. And it's thousands of years old. It blew everybody's minds because nothing like that, that sophisticated, should possibly have existed. Because when you have something that complex, and indicating such incredible genius to construct it and build it with materials of the time, you have to assume it's not a one-off. It's not, you know, some incredible genius to figure this out. It's got to be part of a legacy, part of a tradition. Think of how many other mechanisms have to exist for that one to have been created, and they're all gone. They all got destroyed. Well, that in itself is the kind of artifact discovery that shrieks and shouts, we are not the first. There was a high civilization recent in human history, thousands of years ago, that has disappeared because of cataclysm, because of the planet destroying almost everything from its era. And then you get this chance discovery, this thing that got saved because it sank to the bottom of the Mediterranean, and it was covered with silt and lay there until it was picked up, you know, by a modern expedition in the 50s.
It makes you wonder why these great libraries over the course of history have been destroyed.
Well, one can say there's a group of guys whose job it is to make sure we don't remember who we are.
That's kind of what I'm thinking here, Richard, because, you know, the pyramids that have been discovered underwater? I don't remember this. Yeah.
The ones on the eastern edge of Cuba?
Yeah, that's it.
Paulina Zelitsky. Actually, I was in touch with her and her husband, until all communication suddenly ceased, because we're not supposed to know there's a city down there that sank a half a mile due to this incredible planetary cataclysm. Well, remember, that's part of the discussion that was leading us up to the mythic date of 2012, that periodically the planet does this, and the survivors then have to rebuild. That was the whole hype around the end of the Mayan calendar. Well, isn't it interesting that the possible means of finding out if we're the first has suddenly now gone silent and has carved out 6 weeks to do anything they want in terms of taking pictures, doing analysis. It doesn't take a month to do an analysis of a rock sample. So they will have 6 weeks in the clear with a plausible excuse for the press, who, of course, wouldn't dare to ask a serious question. And God knows what we're going to see on the other side. Now, the good news is there are some political clues. Like, for instance, did you see the Academy Awards?
I did.
Did you see the bizarre Shatner Star Trek thing at the beginning?
Yes.
And did you make note of what the recurring theme was?
I can't remember it at this moment.
Time travel.
Oh, yeah, of
the
course.
The future can be changed. Your ratings are terrible, but if we do the right things, we can make your ratings good. It was a blatant message. The whole thing was one-to-one set of symbolic messages. I've never seen an Academy Awards ceremony, which is second only to, you know what, the Super Bowl in terms of audience participation. End-to-end messages, coded symbolic messages indicating something big is coming, having to do with space, with film, science fiction film. I mean, Argo is a film about a film, right?
Yes.
And it's a film about a very particular film, which was not originally called Argo. It was called The Lords of Light, based on a novel by Robert Zelazny, who's a brilliant, you know, old-school writer, sci-fi writer. And the theme of it was a planet which basically creates gods who come to Earth. Do you begin to see the drift of this?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
And now we have a presidential pop into the newsroom yesterday when the sequester finally was inevitable. And whoever picked that name, and what does sequester mean, John? It means to hide away.
This is correct. Isolate.
Sequester a jury. What are we dealing with here? We're dealing with someone who has hidden away the real history of the human race. Nothing more, nothing less. And what does President Barack Obama do? He sets out to create a metaphor melding Star Wars and Star Trek traditions and create something called a Jedi mind meld. And everybody says, oh, he made a gaffe. No, not.
That's interesting. I've been hearing about this, Richard. Keep going for a second. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
You love conspiracies. You're surrounded by them. You just haven't thought big enough.
Yeah, I don't like them that much, but I am surrounded by them, yes.
Well, it's not a matter of like or dislike. If you're going to figure a way out of the maze.
Well, that's right.
You've got to understand the maze.
Face the horror, make it your friend, that thing.
And we know that information is passed all the time. My friend Gene Roddenberry, speaking of Star Trek, told me something many, many, many years ago when I introduced him to the Mars data, you know, vis-a-vis Cydonia, face of Mars and all that. We had a whole afternoon where he basically shut off the phones and locked himself in his office with me and a bunch of 16x20s, and we spent the entire day going over the Mars data I had at that time. And at the end of the day, he's sitting behind his desk, he's steepling his fingers. The photographs are all over the floor between the desk and the couch where I've been sitting and pointing at various things on the pictures when he was looking down at them. And he leans back and looks at me and he says, but Dick, look, if this was real, it would be on television.
The problem that I have with this, it seems to me that there is you just keep tossing out little bits of information that get your attention just for a few moments. And then somebody maybe says, no, I don't think so. It seems like it doesn't matter how dramatic the piece of information might be. All it takes is a couple of little snippets of naysaying, as we just got into a minute ago. And a person tends to just move on. And it seems like we're getting sprinkles of truth, which is, of course, is what you have to have in any good disinformation program. You got to have some sprinkles of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that's what we're getting on a broad basis, on many different levels. And it is, I've said this before, and I think this road also goes to Rome, but
if you go back 50 years,
if you do what? If you
take the Wayback Machine and go back 50 years to when the Eisenhower administration was ending and the Kennedy administration was just being born, that period of transition from November of 59 to January 20th of 1960. In that period of time, a study was coming to conclusion under NASA at the Brookings Institution, which basically was an analysis of all the long-range impacts of NASA activities on American civilization, American society. And in that report, which was then delivered by the Kennedy administration to the 87th Congress, this is an official government document, a NASA document, which is actually a small book. It's 200 and some pages. I've got a copy, one of the very few that are currently still in existence. On page 217, they talk about what NASA should do if it discovers evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yes.
And they make several projections of what could happen to society if that, in fact, came about. One which, the bottom line was they were terrified that it would basically destroy civilization.
Mm-hmm.
They actually say that in the document, which was picked up by the New York Times in December of 61 and actually made into a headline with a story. You can search the archives of the New York Times, or you can go to enterprisemission.com and search for Brookings Report, and it will take you to the same stories and the report. Or part of it. Bottom line, we were such a freaked out culture in the 50s. I mean, McCarthy et al., Russians, commies, duck and cover, nuclear annihilation just around the corner, Twilight Zone launched, that we were not ready. It wasn't time. So part of the Brookings recommendation was that NASA or the government should explore with other studies the efficacy of basically educating the public through all media, including film, to the idea that we are not alone. So we wouldn't freak out and destroy civilization. And if you look at the last 50 years, John, what have we seen? We've seen a parade of television shows, major films, film actors, awards, presentations, all on the theme, we are not alone.
Well, not only that, though, but it's being let out in a very controlled manner. Let me just toss this in quickly. I was the narrator on a program that was seen on many different channels last year called Unsealed. And there were conspiracy files and there were alien files. I did the alien files thing. And one of the there was Nazi UFOs and multiple landings and in New Mexico, and multiple meetings with Eisenhower and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to the part about the Vatican and underneath St. Peter's Basilica, this nun said the Holy Fathers must have had a good reason for keeping this thing secret. And it was about elongated skulls, very much like the crystal skulls in the Indiana Jones thing.
And the ones in Peru.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we got 1 minute, so use 15 seconds of it.
Well, if everybody wants to see the layout of the theory and the model and the data and why I'm convinced tonight that this is a cover story, they're going to do 6 weeks of secret investigation of ancient ruins on Mars as a prep to get ready for something. I don't want to use the D word, but maybe. Come and see me at Awake and Aware in about a month, Glendale. The website is, if I can pull it up here,
quick,
go to it. And it's awakeandaware2013.net.
Okay, Richard, thanks a lot. Thank you very much, my friend, for coming on the program. As soon as they let go of some of this data, please come back right away. All right. You heard the man. Brad Barker is next on Coast to Coast AM.